June 5th, this coming Monday, is the debt ceiling deadline. That's the date that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has said the U.S. will no longer be able to cover all of its financial obligations. In other words, the country would be unable to pay all the money it owes. A federal debt default could have a number of pretty heavy consequences, hurting America's credit rating, setting off economic turmoil domestically and potentially around the world, unless Congress is able to raise the national borrowing limit, also known as the debt ceiling. Over the weekend, President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy finally struck a deal over the debt ceiling bill. The House is working to vote on it this evening. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been worried about the default scenario we've been hearing about? What questions do you have about what's in this deal, this bill that would raise the debt ceiling limit? Have you followed the negotiations? Are there other outcomes you would like to see? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back. Glad to be here.
Well, this deal from over the weekend was a long time in the making. Can you recap some of the highlights of what it took to get to where we are today?
Yeah, there were moments where we wondered if we were ever going to get to today when the House is going to vote. They've cleared, they're clearing a rule now, and they were expected to vote tonight, but this goes back months. We can look back to last year when House Republicans won control of the chamber, and we knew this was a thing they needed to do this year. And then we can look to January, when McCarthy won the speakership and what was a really fraught process. Took him 13 ballots to get there, and this was looming ahead as sort of the big test that he was going to face after he secured that. And then we saw one brief conversation between the president and McCarthy in January where they brought up the debt ceiling, and then nothing, as McCarthy likes to point out, 97 days of which they did not talk about the debt ceiling until we got to this month. And it seemed to then be crunch time. It became apparent that June was the deadline, that they needed to get something done by early June. And the House was able to pass a bill. So we saw the House surprise, sort of defy expectations and get a piece of legislation through that would raise the debt ceiling and sort of do all the things Republicans thought they should get in exchange for raising the debt ceiling: cut spending, get rid of some programs, approve permitting reform, a bunch of different things that they wanted done. And that's really what kicked off the negotiations. And we've been watching weeks of these negotiations behind closed doors. And for those of us that have been in Washington for a while, I've been here over a decade, really just quiet closed door. They weren't leaking. They weren't coming out and telling people what either side said. They're really hashing it out behind closed doors until Saturday night when they came out and said, all right, they have a deal. And so this long process over days and weeks to get an agreement that now it looks like optimistically for them is going to pass through Congress.
Now, our starting point to get here in some ways was President Biden said, hey, this is the debt ceiling. It shouldn't be negotiating leverage for the budget. We'll do that with the budget later this year. So, no, we shouldn't be making a deal at all. Republicans passing that bill you mentioned, which says we should use the debt ceiling as leverage to do a lot of things we want to do that we think we were elected to do with the House. Where did we end up? What are some of the highlights of the deal they ended up reaching somewhere between those two points?
That's right. If you go back and you ask the White House even today, are they negotiating the debt ceiling? The answer would be no. They would say they're negotiating over spending separately. A parallel track was one of their ways they like to describe it. But it is, in fact, a negotiation to get this debt ceiling bill passed. And what the deal does is it caps spending. So it's going to free spending essentially over the next 2 years in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. And it will allow some other key pieces of legislation that they wanted to see passed. So we're talking about permitting reform is a big thing that they have been discussing, getting to an agreement that allows, and permitting reform sounds like, a term that doesn't really clear what it means, but it would allow some energy projects to move more quickly through Congress. So permitting reform is a piece of it, extends the debt limit to 2025. And then it allows for, it stops or doesn't allow for the president to extend the student loan borrowing freeze that has been in place. So it stopped some of those pieces from moving forward, which was already sort of the plan the president had in terms of ending the freeze on student loan payments.
You mentioned extending the debt ceiling to 2025. It's 2023 right now, and well, right between those is the 2024 election. Is that an important factor in why this goes into 2025 so we don't have to deal with this before the election?
Absolutely. I think that if you're any member of Congress and you're watching or the president and you're watching this all play out, the last thing you want to do is probably repeat this, at least if you're Kevin McCarthy or Joe Biden, in the fall of next year or the summer of next year, when you're looking days, weeks away from a presidential election. The sort of partisanship gets really cranked up in Washington in an election year. Sure, it would maybe provide a bit more leverage to some sides. So maybe some rank and file members of the House see it doing it again next year as an opportunity to extract more concessions from the White House. But these things are much more difficult if you try to do them in an election year. And so absolutely it was a factor in these negotiations, getting clear of that election. And then they can also say to their voters, this is what I did. This is what I argued. Send me back to do it again, whether you're Biden or House Republicans. This is something they can talk about to voters when they go out and campaign.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital, talking about the debt ceiling deal reached between President Biden, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, now going to votes in the House. Probably this evening. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Christine joins us now in Eau Claire. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for letting me onto the program. Frankly, as an independent, I'm really frustrated that the news media hasn't done a better job of letting the U.S. Americans know that it's really the Republicans that are being the jerks in this situation. I know that the Democrats had a chance before they lost the House to address this, but Biden gave them the House a budget on March 9th, and McCarthy has been stalling and lying and stalling and lying. And it's just, there are 40 million people in America who are impoverished, and Congress is doing nothing except whatever negotiations are going to affect people who are poor or working class.
Christine, thanks a lot for the call. First of all, Ginger, Christine, putting the blame here on the Republicans over the tightness of this deadline on the debt ceiling.
Well, it's absolutely true that the Republicans are the ones who saw that this offered them leverage. I think there would be a lot of different opinions, and that's one take, about whether or not it was a good thing that they used that leverage. Republicans, conservatives say they should have used more leverage. Democrats wanted to raise the debt ceiling. They should have used all they could to get out even more concessions, more cuts to government funding, more cuts to government programs, that this is the only way they could get something done. Critics, Democrats, probably some independents, like the caller now, would say that this is not an item you should have been taking leverage on, that raising the debt limit isn't authorizing new spending, that this is spending that's already been approved, and that it would be wrong to use this as leverage, that you're risking the economy, people who could lose their jobs if we saw a recession. And then I think we're also going to hear a lot of criticism from Democrats. We've seen Democrats who have said they aren't going to vote for this deal, even though it was negotiated by the president, including folks like Bernie Sanders, who announced today he wasn't going to vote for the bill, who are upset that it could make cuts to some government programs, particularly food stamps. It has a work requirement that would require more people work more hours in order to be eligible for food stamps. And they've long argued, particularly in states that have implemented similar programs, these programs do nothing to help people, but instead take assistance away from sick people, from disabled people, from people who are maybe suffering from drug addictions, and rely on these programs in order to have something to eat.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the debt ceiling and the race in Congress to pass a bill that raises that ceiling before the country, in theory, defaults on its debts starting as soon as next week. Ginger Gibson stays with us, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? What do you think about the politics at play here, the policies you're hearing about in this conversation? Ultimately, do you want your Wisconsin a member of Congress, your senators, to vote for this debt ceiling extension? Why or why not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Ginger Gibson, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. We're talking about the bill in Congress to raise the national debt limit. The U.S. House is expected to vote on that tonight. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about what's in this deal and why it's there and what you want to happen. If you want the Wisconsin congressional delegation to support this deal or try to block it, join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger, you mentioned some Republicans in the House not happy with the deal. They wanted to get more out of the debt ceiling leverage. This is tied up in how Speaker Kevin McCarthy became Speaker Kevin McCarthy in the first place. Can you talk about how that all ties together?
That's right. We all remember back in January, although it does at times feel like an eon ago, Kevin McCarthy had a really hard time becoming Speaker. It took 13 ballots to get him there. And part of the concern that the real hardliners and his caucus had, even at the time, was what was going to happen when the debt ceiling had to be raised. They wanted promises from McCarthy that he would extract concessions from the administration. So he was making promises to his members in the process of getting elected speaker that he would go hard in these negotiations and that he would produce results for them. And there was always this explicit threat that if he didn't, his job would be terminated. He also agreed at that time to allow the return of what's known as the motion to vacate, which says that any member of the House can stand up on the floor and make a motion to kick the speaker out of that job. That had been removed in an effort to keep sort of small revolts by just little parts of the caucus from happening. He allowed it to come back. I mean, right now, at this point, at 4:49 on Wednesday, it doesn't look like there will be a motion to vacate over this debt ceiling, and it looks like he will weather the storm. But I've learned in Washington to never predict the future. It remains a daily possibility for him, especially as we see a number of Republicans not voting on the procedural motion just now that passed and that have said they won't vote on the bill tonight.
So we got another caller now. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Afternoon. Yeah, I think that it's mostly political posturing on both sides, really. If there's anybody serious about getting rid of or reducing the debt, Social Security, defense spending, Medicare, Medicaid all have to be in the conversation, and nobody's willing to do that. So if they're serious, they might look at a national sales tax dedicated to debt reduction only. And then they could, you know, we didn't get in this hole overnight, and we aren't going to get out of it. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. Ginger, Jimmy does a great job of summing up things that are not on the table, never really were on the table in this debt conversation. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, military spending, and increasing taxes. And I think it's hard to reduce the deficit and bring down the overall debt without looking at least some of those things.
That's right. I mean, you look at something like he pointed out, Jimmy pointed out this, a national sales tax. That's a non-starter for both sides. Sales tax, tax as a portion of income, poorer people more than wealthy people. Think about it. If we both go buy a loaf of bread and pay a dollar in taxes and I make $100 a week and you make $1,000 a week, I've paid more of my income in taxes than the wealthy person, would be the argument Democrats would make against a sales tax. And Republicans are just anti-taxes. So they're not going to approve any new taxes at all. They think we have too many taxes. And that even for something like debt reduction, we shouldn't have more taxes. So I think those were non-starters. Lowering the deficit have been really an issue that a lot of people talk about, but has not been really tackled. We did see McCarthy today talking about a blue ribbon panel or some type of panel to investigate deficit reduction. That was something he waved off a number of months ago, now seems to be back as an option. And I think it's because finding a solution that is sustainable, I think is the other piece, right? You might get some type of debt reduction in place, some type of idea of debt reduction in place, and our government changes hands. And so 2, 4, 6 years later, a different party's in charge and they undo the plan the other side had to reduce the deficit. So I do think that it's a very complicated long-term problem, and no one thus far has seemed to come up with a way that they think would address it over the long haul.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Marlene now in Marshfield. Marlene, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Marlene?
Well, I just, I'm concerned. I supervise a team of people for a charitable organization. We assist people who are elderly and disabled. And this whole conversation is putting many people who on a horrific edge. They, you know, live on Social Security or food stamps. They're unable to live independently without that sort of assistance. A lot of very elderly people. And I think this is torturous, and this playing this game of let's crash the system, you know, kind of teasing is cruel, and that it should really be resolved in a different manner than it presently is. Yes, spending should not continue, but it should not be that, yes, when our team is in the favor, we can do this. And when your team, we're going to hold our breath and have daily announcements on television that have a lot of people very concerned about even staying housed. I think it's cruel and should somehow find some other way to address that.
Marlene, thanks a lot for that call. A couple ways I want to look at that, Ginger. First of all, the notion that if we didn't end up with a debt ceiling increase, there has been concern that the people that Marlene is talking about, people receiving Social Security or food stamps, well, they might be on the list of things that government wouldn't be able to pay. Is that a concern if the debt ceiling isn't raised?
I think that is a concern, and I would take it one step further. I mean, I think that there's a discussion being had in Washington about whether there should be a debt ceiling at all. One sort of thread through all of this debate and discussion was whether the White House could invoke the 14th Amendment, as it was being said, which says in it that the debts of the United States should not be questioned. There has been a lot of legal arguments that that means that there shouldn't even be a debt ceiling, that there's the Constitution says that they can't be questioned, that they could just raise that debt, you know, amount as Treasury saw fit. There is a real possibility that we could see the president, after this is resolved, try to do away with the debt ceiling forever. Forget 2 years, try through the end of time. The president has acknowledged a number of times that that option was going to require a lot of legal litigation, that he thought the courts would get involved and there would be a question about whether or not it was constitutional. And that made it really not a practical option in the moment right now, because they would default before they could answer those questions. But I wouldn't rule it out. People who argue that, you know, playing with the debt ceiling, running into questions about whether or not someone's Social Security check or a veteran's disability check is going to show up next week really is a reason to just do away with the whole thing, that we're the United States and that nobody else in the developed world has a debt ceiling and that we should just get rid of it. In fact, maybe we already did the 14th Amendment and we should just acknowledge it.
Thanks for that call, Marlene. And then zooming in on this deal, you mentioned earlier, Ginger, this idea of work requirements for people receiving food assistance and other forms of assistance. More work requirements for some people up to age 55. But for some people, I believe, including veterans, the requirements would actually be loosened. So the deal might not affect the people Marlene's working with so much. Do I have that right?
That's right. So there are some changes. In fact, the Congressional Budgeting Office came out last night and said, actually, maybe those changes would result in more people being eligible for food stamps and it costing the government more, not less, and it isn't a savings. We had a story a couple weeks ago looking at some of those changes, not all of them, but some similar versions that have been enacted in states. Places like Arkansas have done some similar things. And figuring out the effects is really complicated because some people think they've lost their benefits and they haven't, or they don't know how to apply for exemptions because they hear they're supposed to work now and they're not, or they can't, and they just say, well, I guess I don't know how to navigate the bureaucracy of an exemption. That means I don't get any more benefits. So I think we're going to see people paying close attention to whether or not this affects disabled veterans. This affects people who are really incapable of working, who might not be able to figure out the paperwork that's going to take for them to keep their benefits.
Ginger, I want to take our last minute and a half or so to look at what's next. As you mentioned, some rules hurdles being cleared now. Vote expected tonight. If the House does pass this, and it seems like it's leaning that way, what's the timeline from here on out?
That's right. So they passed this vote, this rules vote, just as I was getting on the air with you. So that's done. And that's normally a pretty good indication that they're going to have the votes to pass it, we think, after 8 o'clock tonight. And then next it goes to the Senate. And at first we saw some threatening from some senators that they might try to block it or delay the bill because they were unhappy with it. And they sort of backed down, Senator Lee saying they're going to let him have a vote on an amendment and that will get him on board and he won't try to block it or delay things. So could happen on Friday, could happen on Saturday, could happen on Sunday, but it looks like the Senate is on track once the likeliness that the House sends it over to them this evening.
And just our last minute now, Ginger, if the House for some reason votes it down tonight or doesn't end up with the vote, well, then what?
Well, I would not look at your 401k in the morning if the House votes this down, but there will definitely be a scramble. There will be a lot of scrambling on the Hill to figure out what they need to do to get the votes and whether or not Democrats and Republicans could figure out a new path forward. I would just stay off your 401k website until they figure it out. That would be my suggestion.
Ginger, we'll leave it there. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. She joined us for a look at the latest on this bill in Congress aimed at raising the debt ceiling. Keep following the news. You can listen here, of course, on the Ideas Network. Watch WPR.org for ongoing reporting from our friends at NPR.